Chef James Sihaboot's family came to America from a Lao refugee camp in Thailand. It was 1981, and they didn't know a single person. They were settled on 25th Street in Oakland, California, in a neighborhood called the Laotian Ghetto, and James grew up there at cookouts with the neighbors who became his aunties and uncles. And he grew up in the Thai restaurant his mother opened and ran for most of his life. He worked in that restaurant after school, every weekend, every summer break. And he was a seasoned restaurant professional by the time he graduated high school. But it was turning on the TV one morning that actually made him want to be a chef. So James, can you tell us about what you saw on TV that day?
I saw professionals. I saw a whole new level of cookery than what I was living in mom and pop's place. What I saw on TV was like, wow, this magnificent chef with starch whites, a toque, immaculate kitchen, copper pans, and making beautiful, meticulous food. And that's when got the bug bite. It's like, wow, I need to do that. And, you know, parents, especially being first-generation Asian American, we came here to live the American dream. I told my mom, like, I want to cook for a living. She thought I was nuts. You know, she's like, okay, you want to cook, but I need to tell you, you're going to be very, very poor. And she's like, it's beyond financially, you know, socially, emotionally, and she didn't want me to do it.
So it's funny, so her world of professional cooking was just drudgery, just hard work and trying to make it by. And what you were trying to say to her was, no, there's more to it than that.
Yeah.
There's a great moment in the book where you talk about using like a high power blender for the first time. Mm-hmm. And making a puree versus thinking about pounding a mortar and pestle. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, yeah. It's just like a much different, efficient approach. You know, fine dining, everything's more refined. Everything's smoother. Everything's passed through a chinois. Mm. We're making stock, and I was never taught. At least my mom, we never skimmed it. And once I got into culinary school, like, you know, we constantly skim our stock, strain it, pass it through cheesecloth, get as clear as you want. But now looking back, I'm like, ask myself, why are we not skimming the stock, like making, you know, pho or kapun? It's like that impurities, it's protein, it's flavor. You know, why do we want to skim that away? You know, so there's two sides of the argument. Mm. And I'm kind of like stuck in the middle. So it's like kind of like situational.
Yeah. And it's situational in a really interesting way. Because you truly are now a star in the world of fine dining. Your restaurant, Komi, is a 2 Michelin star restaurant. So by that standard, it's literally one of the best restaurants in the world where you serve extremely refined, creative, high-end food. But then after a few years of having the restaurant and having, you know, accolades and press, there's another moment in your life that you talk about in the book where you're visiting your mom in her restaurant. And it'd been years where business was getting sort of bad for her and she's tired and she wants to give up but can't let go. Can you remember that moment?
Very vividly. I remember, like, you know, what the weather was like. Walking to the kitchen, you know, I haven't seen my mother for a while, even though the restaurant's so close. I was just so focused on Komi. I went to visit one, just kind of check in. Actually, I was kind of hungry. And I was walking in, it's like, wow, it's my mom kind of looked lost and fatigued, and she wasn't in a happy place. And the state of the restaurant was in a happy place, you know, a lot of neglected maintenance. And, you know, be mindful, this is like 2009, 2010, so, you know, the economy was still not in the best shape. And I can help my mom see my mom live this way. And she always talked about going to go back home. I just want to live in the countryside and raise water buffaloes and, you know, be in the rice fields and be with her siblings. And I was like, you know, that's it. It's like, that's what you're going to do. Just drop everything. I'll buy you a one-way plane ticket back and don't worry about the rest, you know. And then I got, now I'm a leaseholder now of this restaurant I grew up in. It's like, yeah, you know, I could easily do a light version of Komi, open a bistro and serve duck confit and steak frites, and it'll be Komi casual in a way. But it's like, that place is just so sentimental for me. And it kind of hit me a shock where, man, I can't come over for like these meals anymore. When I want to eat some jeopardy or, you know, kapun, that's like, and it's a shame. I've seen it made before, but I was never involved in the entire process of making these dishes. And it's kind of a shame, like, what got me in the love of cooking, I kind of turned my back on. Right. And I was like, yeah, it's a damn shame. It's like, you know, I kind of left some things kind of unsettled. Yeah, so yeah. Kind of like going back and, you know, reconciling my past and, yeah, I kind of remember and respect, like, why I got into cooking in the first place.
Yeah. So now you have these two sides. You have the fine dining, commis, you know, largely European-derived technique and exceeding at that. And now you have this other restaurant, Hawker Fare, right, which is about cooking the Laotian food that you had to find. You know, it was in your memory, but you had to, like, actually learn how to make. So, you know, in this episode, we've been talking a lot about how people feel that their food says something about them. So how do you think of yourself now as a cook and as a person versus when you felt like, you know, the world that mattered was fine dining?
Now I feel well more rounded. I feel more as a overall rounded cook on a personal level, on a soulful level, that now, like, my two worlds are finally colliding. Now, actually, they kind of work in tandem. In no means, like, I fuse the two cuisines. It just affects the way I cook and look at food. It makes me understand what my role as a chef is to make food delicious. And now I have this point of reference of, like, when I make a dish at commis, conceptualizing a dish at commis, like, very elaborate process. And at the end of the day, we taste the dish. And the question I ask myself now is, like, yeah, it's cool, it's pretty, it looks nice. But is it satisfying? Is it delicious? Is it as craving as, you know, the Tom Kim stew that my mom makes? Does it gives me that same satisfaction? Mm. So that I think that helps me become a better fine dining cook, if anything.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, and the tricky part, like, it doesn't work reverse. You know, when I start cooking Lao, no, seriously, when I start cooking Lao food, I was being too technical and systematic and not letting my instincts tell me. I was too, like, technique driven. Because I've been fine dining for so long, I became like a jarhead somewhat. So, you know, in cooking Lao food and, like, rustic food in general, you have to use your instincts. You have to, like, trust your instincts, make sure you're calibrated. You know, and that's how the way, you know, a lot of moms cook. You know, a handful of this, a pinch of that, throw this in. It's delicious, you know. She's not overthinking it. And that's the beauty of it.
Yeah. Thank you, chef.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a fun discussion.
James Siaboot's book is Hawker Fare, Stories and Recipes from a Refugee Chef's Thai, Isan, and Lao Roots. Find his recipe for shredded chicken salad with herbs, fish sauce, and lime, also called yum gai, at splendidtable.org.